Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Well, the grains continue to rally in Chicago and Kansas City. We'll find out if the trend higher can continue today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Vince Reideke of Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign. Let's open today's discussion with this question. How much of the new crop corn and soybeans do you have marketed at this time? And have you advised making new crop cash wheat sales? Paul Cooley.
You know, on this, wheat is an easy answer. No, the trend has been so unmistakably up. We did do some hedging strategies and writing out of the money calls on wheat. But we did it because there was going to be a big increase in wheat acreage. But the trend now is unmistakably higher. Also, the trend is unmistakably higher in new crop corn. People have been very aggressive from the 250 area to the 260 area. We did see some selling at the 260 level at this time. But once again, the trend is unmistakably higher.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Vince Reineke of Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign.
Well, I would have to say yes and yes. So, yes, we have a good bit of new crop corn, both the 06 and then some of 07 as well as 08 sold at this point. And then I think, you know, we've had a good portion of this year's wheat crop sold for, I don't want to say a year, but probably 8 months or so. So, I mean, I think just as Paul said, you know, the trend might be our friend at this point and up, but at the same time, I think Paul probably, or Pete will probably say here pretty quick, you know, you got to sell as it's going up, because when you get to the top and it starts heading back down, then you really don't want to sell.
Is that what you're going to say, Pete Manhart?
Sell increments on the way up. We've got some guys that haven't sold any. We've got guys probably as much as 30% sold on new crop corn. We've got guys holding old crop corn, because we're not back to $2 in most places. We've sold, had a lot of guys sell the new crop beans when they were over $6. We got as high as $6.30, $6.40 in places, depending on where you're, you know, close to a river or not. But a lot of stuff over $6 on new crop beans. Right now we're looking at selling bumps still on beans, but still hanging on to some corn after, if you've got 20-25% sold.
Grains from the Chicago Board of Trade. March oats at 202 this week. We're up 11 and a quarter cents. The wheat futures finished the March contract 361 and a half on their high, the low at 337 and a half. Their settlement price up 13 cents this week at 356 and a half on the weekly closes. July futures at 378. Up 14 cents Friday to Friday. From the corn pit, the March contract, a high of 225 and three quarters. They're low at 215 and a quarter. Settlement price, they're up 6.5 cents at 225 and a quarter. And Dease corn at 260, up 5 3/4. Now, the March corn contract, as we said, finished at 225 and a quarter for the week. It hasn't yet managed to fill a gap left September the 12th. That's at $2.27. I mention this only because it doesn't show up in the lead option weekly or the monthly charts, but it seems to be an area of potential resistance for the old crop corn, which I'll remind you still has a 2.4 billion bushel carryout. I guess my question is this. How differently do farmers need to view the old and the new crop sales at this time? Is it okay to scale up, sell them together, or do they need to push one faster than the other? Paul Cooley.
Well, I definitely think that your question's very you know, appropriate, and my opinion is that you definitely want to be a bigger seller of the old crop because the card game is still yet to be played in the new crop, so to speak. When we look at you know, just the pure supply demand, you know, we're still looking at a situation where the carryover is going to be, in the 2-3 billion bushel plus category. And that's if there's no weather problems whatsoever in the world. And so there is a feeling that, you know, after a period of time that our exports aren't going to meet the criteria that the USDA mentioned. So definitely play the old crop card at a bigger pace than the new crop.
Vince, you look like you had wanted to jump in on that particular issue. Old crop, new crop?
Sure. I guess I would have to say I think you have to be a scale-up seller of both. But at the same time, and I'll probably say more so than what Paul just mentioned about be a little more aggressive on the old crop. I mean, I would tend to agree with that, but at the same time, you also need not leave the old or the new crop out hanging. We definitely need to be sellers of the new crop. Again, we talked earlier about the uptrend that looks like to be there in corn and wheat, and you can't deny that. But at the same time, Paul just mentioned carryout numbers of 2.4 billion. There's no doubt, even with demand, you know, nearing 11 billion next year, we still have got to sell a crop. And if you don't get it sold, that's where you're gonna, in our opinion, you know, fall behind.
Another chart bit here on December 06 charts. You can draw a line from the contract high at 269. That was made May the 31st of 2004, across last July's high at 263 and three quarters, and you'll get this week's high price at 260 and a quarter. So if you hit the tops, that's where you run on the top of those. I suppose it's just a note of caution, or maybe I'm overanalyzing, and maybe we should let Glenn Ring take a crack at that one a little later on in the program. So I want to know, when you look at the marketplace, what are the things that have been playing most importantly in the corn and the wheat pit? Is it the drought in the Southwest? Is it DBC buying in corn and wheat as they fill up that index fund that they've started, I guess, on Friday? It actually started listing. Or is there something else that's playing in these two markets?
Well, I think you put both of them together. You've got the weather, and on wheat, it's here, plus it's in the Ukraine and Russia. The Ukraine exports more wheat than we do. Maybe a third of their crop's gone from freezing weather. We've also got February now. Maybe we're going to have some cold come in our wheat, which is in poor shape in Texas, Oklahoma, and up into Kansas, that maybe we'll have some cold weather problems there. But then you also have the funds, and the funds are coming in buying corn and buying wheat massively this last week, and that's helping push the stuff higher. So I think it's both of them put together, and I think once that fund buying is over, or if it does, you know, what happens when it's over, where will we be? And I think that's why you should be, you know, selling as it moves up.
This is the question I asked last week. You know, when they stop buying, what happens? And the open interest apparently has gotten fairly large.
You know, the open interest is enormous. And, of course, we did see something new in the wheat area. We saw Cargill, a very aggressive pricing on sales they have made to Iraq on wheat. Also, the Indian government is announcing that they are going to go out into the world market and buy 500,000 metric tons of wheat. And, of course, the Weather Bureau basically says, you know, officially we do have a La Nina situation in the wheat country. And, of course, the President of the United States very eloquently said that we are basically addicted to oil. And the way we're going to work our way out of this is with ethanol. And I think that made John Deere stock rally considerably. It also encouraged, you know, sugar prices were rallying as well. And at the same time, we saw pictures on CNBC of a cornfield taller than the White House. And it sure brought back pictures of let's raise corn and turn it into ethanol here in the U.S.
We shouldn't forget that ADM stock going up either, should we, Paul?
Hey, speaking of that, you know, the president said, he said ethanol, but in the same breath, I suppose, he said Texas. He said switchgrass.
And wood chips.
And wood chips. So I don't know exactly what to make of this on that front, but I do want to read just a portion of what Dave Dickey, who wrote in this week's Ag newsletter that you can sign up for on our website. This is about ethanol, and Dave went in and dug in some of the statistics. So after doubling in size, he writes, then doubling again the past few years, the ethanol industry now consists of 95 U.S. plants, that produced 4 billion gallons last year. That's only enough to replace about 3% of the 140 billion gallons of gasoline the U.S. burned last year. It would take 119 billion gallons of ethanol to annually for a nationwide switch to E85. And by comparison, here's where I want you to talk about this just a little bit, Paul. Brazil gets half of its motor fuel from ethanol, but it took a strong government push to get to that point. Brazil poured at least $16 billion of government support into ethanol subsidies. Plus, it gave the industry a boost with several billion dollars worth of tax breaks. Brazil can produce ethanol from corn waste at about $2.30 a gallon. This week, the average price for a gallon of gasoline in the U.S. was $2.35. The Energy Department has some data, too, not yet verified, suggesting cellulosic ethanol, I suppose that's the switchgrass stuff, could be produced at $1.30 a gallon. So what did you really make of the president's speech on the State of the Union and his talk about ethanol? I know you like to talk about the rise in the price of John Deere and maybe an ADM stock, but what do you really make of this, and does it make much difference? He's tried it before, and he's never really funded it.
Well, basically, the exciting part of the deal is the Brazilian economy is the fourth largest economy in the world. Of course, the U.S. is the largest, and it's the largest industrialized nation that's actually seeing growth in their economy. What we're seeing also, Todd, is that the big deal is that the Brazilians are turning sugarcane into ethanol, and the price of sugar has jumped from 12 cents a pound to almost 18 and a half, 19 cents. So basically we're seeing this enormous change in the economic dynamics here. There's over 29,000 E85 gas stations in Brazil. We're seeing big oil companies like Shell and British Petroleum, who announced also this week some very big earnings. And I think that the big thing here is that we have been talking about this. We're inviting the land-grant colleges to climb on board. This is really big business, and don't you bet a dollar against it, because you'll be wrong.
And also in the last recent times, I think it was Dutch Royal Shell is showing interest in themselves being in the ethanol business. And if we can get big oil in the ethanol business will boom more than expected.
And, you know, I think, I guess I just have to put my two cents in here, too, about ethanol. What's been amazing to see from my perspective is the number of ethanol plants that have been, people have been, you know, showed interest in just in the state of Illinois. You got one I was talking to a customer today about up near the Quad Cities that, you know, the investment that they want is $105,000. They want 10% now, and that way they can get going as quick as possible here. They want a minimum investment of $105,000. And they said they're almost half funded by now.
Farmers only?
I don't know about farmers only, but you know, you've got local people, virtually, is what he said, are the ones funding it. And so with that in mind, I find that just amazing. And the thing that's interesting is it's not just in the state of Illinois, but it's in about every state that you can think of that has somewhat of a corn supply. Or, you know, there are other places, Florida, for example, where they're using yogurt, you know, waste food products, and then, you know, some orange peels. I think I had seen a plant that makes ethanol out of orange peels. You know, I know of a company, a publicly traded company that Gates just invested in, or a Cascade Investments just invested in, you know, in California, going to build 5 plants in California in the Central Valley. And I mean, it's just great. And I think it's extremely necessary. And Paul mentioned it, and I think he hit it right on the head. Don't bet a dollar against it, because I hope that you'll lose it.
Did you all see that the Illinois Senate committee in the state of Illinois is pushing for ethanol mandate at 12%, actually? And then 15%.
And that would be wonderful. And I think the other thing you got to realize is energy in the world from the oil sector is at a max. We can't produce or get it to where it needs at a higher rate, so we need other sources. And this is why South America's producing a lot of that. They're going to, you know where they're going to ship a bunch of it? They're going to double their production and ship half of it to China. China needs energy. They're going to more than double their cars from 24 million to 57 million in 4 years. What are they going to run it on? They're going to run it on ethanol or something like that, because energy-wise, unless we continue to raise prices of energies tremendously, you just won't be able to have more of that gasoline out there.
All right, all you know, well and good.
I have to say one more thing real quick, too, Todd. Sorry to interrupt.
That's fine.
You know, you mentioned earlier about the cost that Brazil, the money that Brazil put into the ethanol industry down there. And I just have to take a step back and say, you know, the bottom line is that that's a substantial cost, but where did it go and who did it benefit? It benefited the citizens of Brazil and the people in that country. And so, you know, yet again, you're investing in your own country, and I don't think that can be discounted. Granted, it's a substantial investment, but when you invest in this country, I think it's a great thing.
Pro-ethanol across the board, will it increase profit margins for farmers if, like I think all three of you have alluded, big oil companies actually are the ones who make the final and big push investment.
Well, and these new index funds that are coming in, they are used to being in something and holding it for 5 years, 10 years, whatever. Their idea is to come in and hold corn, roll it when it comes to due, and roll it and roll it. And they're going to hold that stuff for years waiting for corn to be now looked at as fuel.
Yeah, in fact, the DBC doesn't change its investment at all for a whole year. They'll be in corn and they'll hold wheat until at least November of next year at 11.25% of whatever their total investment is, and that ranges somewhere between $50 million and $1.5 billion, depending on how many $25 shares they're able to sell.
And they're only one fund. If there's lots
well,
of
Todd,
other
let's
funds.
Just poll the panel. If they had $10,000 wasting away in their checking account, Pete, would you buy one of those funds?
I would, and I think you should, you know, what's it doing in other stocks? Maybe you ought to take it out where you got it and put it over there.
Vince?
I guess I'm a disagreeer there. I think it's going to be a matter of time before they recognize that they're the only player. And when you're playing against yourself, you're making or losing your own money. And not that there aren't a multitude of funds. I understand that. But like I say, if you're all on the long side, then you can all be on the long side and make money until you all sell, right? And then you lose all your own money. So,
well, I think they're going to make money on the oil and oil and the natural gas side of it, or the heating oil and the crude oil, and more so than the corn and the wheat side. But I think you asked a question the week before, why didn't they pick beans? I think the supply and demand tables were so bad on beans, they said veto that one.
Speaking of that, we better get the bean market in here before we have to move on, and we're already, 17 minutes into this program. So tell me what you got on the bean market, and we'll move on to Glen Ring momentarily.
Beans are amazing. We're not looking at fundamentals at all. We're just following the corn and the wheat up. If we were looking at fundamentals, we'd be, by planting time, back down 50 to 70 cents from where we're at.
I saw you holding.
I was holding up my four fingers, right? Yeah, and I'm not trying to be a bear here by any means, but if we were looking at fundamentals, we'd see a four in front of beans, you know, and that's just the fact of the matter. We've done a number of meetings across the state of Illinois that, and it seems like that's the worst part of the meeting when I put one on is the supply and demand tables. You know, 505 million in carry out. Some folks are even thinking, you know, we aren't going to hit. I think FC Stone was saying, you know, we don't even think we're going to get to our export number that the government expected last go round.
Cooley,
you know, it's just amazing. So I.
They stole everything I was going to say, Todd.
You told us the trend was down on Wednesday. You're still there with that?
Well, believe it or not, the computer closed right at the 595 level, and it closed in that I don't know gray area. But, we'll know the answer quickly by Monday morning how it's going to play.
Soy complex, by the way, finished like this. The March 606.25 on the high, the low at 577.5, and a settlement price at 594.75. They were up 5.5 cents from last week. November's at 630.5, up 9.5 cents. From the Mercantile Exchange, February live cattle, 93.95. The high, the low at 92. Settlement at 92.27.5. They were off $1.62.5. The March feeders at 107.82 1/2. They were off 280 for the week. And the Feb lean hogs, 56.45. The high, the low at 54.22.5. And a settlement price at 55.02.5, down 122.5. Everybody convinced that the first couple of days next week are going to be really important for the bean market. Everybody shakes their head. We'll move on and talk with Glen Ring very momentarily.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The month of February began where January left off, unseasonably mild. However, it looks like February will not follow the same path. Temperatures this week were well again above normal, with highs reaching the 50s early in the week. Average daily temperatures continued at a pace 10 to 15 degrees above normal. Most locations in Illinois did not have any day in January normal or below, and for most, this will be the warmest January on record. Precipitation this week was limited to a little light rain on the tail end of the storm that swept across Illinois last weekend. That storm produced rain across the entire state, and January ended up as a wet month in Illinois. Precipitation was near to well above normal, with departures of 200% of normal in the core of the existing drought area in northwestern Illinois. While this in itself isn't a drought breaker, it's a good start as most of what falls at this time of year will stay in the soil. We will start to see some definite shifts in the weather the first full week of February. A large trough developing over the central United States will funnel cold air, which has been lurking in Canada, through the center of the country. Temperatures will be on the decline during the week, with a strong push of cold air by the end of the week. The week should be mostly dry until that time, when some light snow could accompany the cold front. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Vince Reinecke of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Our guest is Glenn Ring. He's the president of Glenn Ring Enterprises, which focuses on providing information, education, research, and support for traders, analysts, and other participants in the futures industry. Glenn produces the biweekly View on Futures newsletter and the View on Futures daily update. Glenn, thanks for joining us today.
To be back.
Hey, I've read some of your recent newsletters and been intrigued by the big picture that you are warning against the idea of riding the bull market against rising interest rates that the Fed's been pushing since the fall of 2001. Can you lay out the framework for that, please?
Well, the rising interest rates going on and the high energy prices, both of them separately, are highly correlated with economic slowdowns, especially when you get to an inverted yield curve. And by the way I put it, I'm not going to be too picky. I'm going to say the yield curve is flat right now, even though there's been times when we've had the near-term or short-term higher. So we're not at an inverted yield curve yet. But that's one of the things that worries me out a little further down the road, that both we've got two macro degree factors, high energy prices, that throughout the history of man, I go back to since the time of Christ, when we've had major energy crises, they've led to major economic slowdowns 100% of the time. Usually 6 months to 2 years out. We'll see. I will readily admit there's a lot of things that have happened in these markets since the turn of the century, though, that are unusual. I hate to say this time is different because no time is ever really different, but sometimes it's exhibited differently.
Glenn, a tip of the hat, we at the local office there in Oakland, ADM, subscribes to you to your letter. The question mark here, and it is unfair, and I apologize, but you're a big, good analyst. Pick five commodities that you would buy like an index fund and hold, and you can't be short, and you'd hold, and name which five you'd buy and hold to the end of the year for the most bullish situation.
If you allow me to allow me, if it moves in my favor, to allow myself to stop out later, I'd be glad to do that. Even though, keep in mind, conjecture is just that. I always respond to what the market does, no matter what I say I think might happen. So I would be buying corn, wheat, and to be in the fairness to the customers or people listening, I'm already long wheat. That would be two of them, probably more wheat. beyond that, I'm not inherently bullish anything right now. I would like to buy the cattle around mid-year, as it stands right now, if we're down in that time frame, and hold those into year-end. But primarily, I will be looking to buy food-type products this year. Part of this is some of my hesitation to go too far out on this is I'm a little bit concerned that we're going to rush to some major highs this year and top some long-term cycles before the year is out.
Glenn, based on you just mentioned that you'd like to and you're looking to own food type commodities. What drives you to want to own those particular type of commodities over energies? Or sure. You know, we've kind of discussed a little bit. Maybe you were
sure.
Listening. You know, about it. Sure seems like energies might be the ones to own. You have a little different approach than or a thought than what we do. What's causing that?
Actually, in fairness, I'm short some energy markets right now. as well because of seasonal factors and post-bull markets. I don't like to take after the market that's already run. I want to take after those that are just getting starting to wake up. And I was actually, I'm not bullish or bearish. I try to report that the market's bullish or bearish. Corn was on a defensive mode until December, got a weekly close above 253. At that point, it's a new, fresh, emerging type market. It's one I like. Now, I don't like to, I'm not going to go out and buy it today. If the market rolls up here and gets our classic February break, I'd like to see December top anywhere from this week to another 10, 12 cents higher, and then slide back down on top of this 252, 253 area in late February, early March. That's when I'll get really interested in it. That's probably the main thing. The other thing is I'm not a fundamentalist, but I also recognize that there's some high-risk weather cycles going on right now. And with La Nina set up in there, I'm watching the psychology of these markets. I think there's once we get rolling and we start having that buffalo herd of fund money pour into a market, all the grains and oilseeds are at risk of going much, much higher than fundamentally justified, even on a weather threat. Would remind people, by the way, that 45% of the highs in the corn year, I think in the last 25 years, have occurred in the months of March and April. So I am going to be very, very wary of a hard run up into that time frame. But for now, I agree with the fellow that said the trends are up in corn and wheat.
Pete here, what would you be looking at farmer-wise to tell him on what to do with their new crop corn and beans as far as marketing?
Sure, I would let the trend run right now. The market has cleared. We made highs on the first trading day of January. We pulled back. We broke out over that almost a month later. That's usually a pretty powerful sign that the trend's going to be up. I'd give the market room to run right now into that March-April time frame. I'm a responder. In other words, I'll watch the market run up, and then I'll get ready to sell it. Now, I would remind people, any commodities that have gotten started running, whether it was cocoa back in 2000 or all the way up to more recently crude oil last summer and then gold this fall, we have been rotating speculative capital around, and I dare say almost all of those markets went a lot higher than anybody thought that was possible when they took off, number one. And number two, I think the fund money is a lot like a buffalo herd. Once it starts heading your way, you don't want to fight it until it's run itself out, meaning allow the market to get overdone, heated. You're almost going to have to say, I'm prepared to play this thing, sell this thing, when I can't believe it's going to go down. In other words, when I get wrapped up in the bullishness, that's when, I, as a producer, I would think about selling it. Again, let the trend work in your favor seasonally and price-wise into that March-April time frame.
Glenn, 15 seconds. Any final word from you on your favorite trades?
Oh, really, it's just a matter of I'm always responding. I'm always my management's more important. The getting out is more important than the getting in is probably the single piece of advice I'd give to people.
We appreciate you being with us, Glenn.
Thank you.
Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises, and he joined us from his office. You can visit his website at glennring.com, Glenn with one N. Now, a final word from our panelists. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
It's a dynamic market, and be very careful at this time because it is tricky.
Vince Reinicke.
I couldn't agree more. I think that you need to stay disciplined and make sure you execute.
And Pete Manhart.
Be ready to sell bounces, especially on the old crop beans and new crop beans, and be ready to sell corn if it goes another 10, 15, if you haven't sold some already.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.